and they wanted to know whether we could pursue the matter at the time. So I know you've always been very effectively prepared, though, DDG, on the matter. But today we come back to this, and especially as we're trying to promote manufacturing, agricultural processing, and all this sort of thing, and to tighten up on the standards and the national regulator for compulsory specifications. Right. So here we are then. Have we got EDDG? So, and truly, are you ready with your team then, who will be this large team? Thank you. That'll be over to you then.
Thank you.
Is really very thin, But when we speak about counterfeits, we're basically speaking about those that we call fake products on the market. Your fake trademarks, like your fake Nikes, fake whatever that is being sold on the street. Those are basically items that are sold in violation of the right of the person that has registered a trademark in respect of that particular product. And then when we speak piracy, basically we're talking to those issues around copying of the work of a particular right holder, which is then sold on to the public without any compensation to that person. So what you find in the pirated goods is that you find that sometimes it's even a production, the original production, but maybe the first version before the final version, that will be then sold in the street. So it's a reproduction of that kind of work, and which is actually a violation of intellectual property of those people. So we see a number of these things in the market, and the question that comes often is that, what are we doing about it? So we are now looking like a big destination for all of these illegal goods. And when you talk about these illegal goods, you'll see when GAS and SARS are doing their presentation, these illegal goods include counterfeits, it includes pirated goods, it includes substandard products that may not necessarily be counterfeited, but really substandard products that should not be entering the country. And also, in terms of the points of entry, the syndicates are always ahead. Yes, I think there's a lot of measures that are put in place, but they always find ways of bringing these goods into the country. You'll see also the statistics will show you that our law enforcement agencies, as well as our agencies such as SARS, NRCS, and the police, are doing a whole lot of work in this area. But we're not seeming to make the strides that we'd like to be making. But there is improvement in what's happening currently. But we're hoping for the best. So we see a number of, in fact, because we deal with alcohol, it's amazing how much fake liquor you find. Not only are we concerned about the fact that it's illegal trade, but it's actually also very harmful products that are going to the people. There's a lot of fake alcohol. The police are confiscating all of this on a daily basis, but we keep seeing a whole lot of that coming through. We've also been in meetings with the tobacco industry association, who are also particularly concerned about the extent of counterfeit cigarettes, you know, that are there in the country. And I think all of these things, because people do not know the difference between counterfeit products and real products. Also, you know, when people purchase, they don't know that. They just go in there for the price. I've actually seen one area around Wolfsburg, in front of Spa. It's a place where they sell cigarettes. Everybody goes in there, they say the cigarette is cheap. And it's a place for only cigarettes. I'm actually wondering if it's legal. I must tell people to go and check in Wolfsburg, in which there's a kind of spa. There's a place there. I must ask people to go and check because you know how I found out is that I was giving my helper a lift. And then she asked to me to drop her there, and then I asked her, why are you going there? And she said, no, I just want to buy a cigarette. And I said, why couldn't we buy it as we're going out of the house, because we went into, and she said, no, then it's cheap there. So you find all the brands in the shop. So I don't know, but those things that we'll look at and perhaps do some inspections around those areas. The last time when we were here, when we were presenting our work, I also just touched on the intellectual property area. And during that discussion, I also indicated that our intellectual property has the potential to actually contribute significantly to the economy. And all of that potential is being undermined by the piracy and the extent of counterfeit goods that are entering our country. We seen how this is impacting on our textiles. We've seen how it's impacting on a number of areas. The music industry is suffering immensely from this. So surely there is a need for us to do something, because it undermines the potential that we can actually derive from these intellectual property items. So we have three pieces of legislation that we implement around this, I think, as a government. The Counterfeit Goods Act, which was passed in 1997, and the Customs and Excise Act, as well as the Criminal Procedure Act. So in terms of the Counterfeit Goods Act, the customs officials are designated inspectors, which means that they can be able to exercise the powers that any inspector that is appointed by the minister can exercise under the Counterfeit Goods Act. That includes inspecting any products that are alleged to be counterfeit, and also sealing those products, obviously through a warrant, and also taking up the matters through the court system. And the police chair, at the level of president and above, they're also designated as inspectors in terms of this legislation, which means that they don't need to come to the minister for permission to go and inspect any premises for that. They can do that at any time when there is a complaint or where they pick up that there may be some counterfeit goods being sold or the trading in that space. So the main issue around the Counterfeit Goods Act is the trading of counterfeit goods. So if you've got those products for personal use, then that is not a problem. But the Act is very clear that it's the trading around that is important. Therefore, Chair, it does raise the question as to why do we still see this product in the flea market, in all of these places, some places, some Chinatown places, and all of that. The question is, you know, where do we draw the line? Where do we say this is not it? Because if people see them like they are normal, then they end up being normal, and we'll not be able to deal with the demand, because then the consumers are having this product and they're cheaper. So I think we need to also, instead of just the strategy that we implement, we need to be clear as a country to say, you know, how do we enforce this and how much effort we put into that. So I just wanted to say that one of the things that we did in regards to the complaints raised by particularly the music industry, we went to the industry and asked them, what do you think government must do? Because the industry has been saying, we keep on saying we are helping them, but we don't seem to be doing anything that really gets to the problem. And we asked them to tell us what it is that they want us to do. In that meeting that was held in Beirut, the industry said to the DCI, we want you to raise awareness on anti-piracy, so that we can reduce the demand for the consumers. Because for as long as they are consumers, then there will be the supply. So if the consumers demand the product, the supply will be there. So we need to reduce the demand on the side of consumers. How do you do that? You do that by ensuring that consumers know that those products are illegal products and that they should not be buying them. Hopefully that will then basically impact on the supply. The second area that they requested to be attended to within the awareness process was the visibility of enforcement. So that meant that there must be a consistent inspection and intervention by the police and the inspectors, which will make sure that these people that trade in these goods do not trade as freely as they do. When we see them in the corners, I mean, they don't even run away when they see the police officers. But so the question is, how do we deal with it? How do we sustain that? But also, it is not only those people in the streets, it's the source. Where are these manufactured? The industry indicated to us that there are allegations that, in fact, the very same manufacturing plants that manufacturing the real goods are manufacturing the very same counterfeit goods. So in as much as there would be some small-scale manufacturing of like illegal products, but the suspicion is that the very, very big ones are actually producing that. If you look at the amount that is available, is that maybe the inspections need to be escalated to the level of factories to see where these products are coming from. And that also links to what Home Affairs was also concerned about around the child pornography, to say where exactly are these things coming from. So what the industry said is that we need to enhance visibility of our inspections, we need to empower the LAPS to be able to enforce the Counterfeit Goods Act and provide the necessary support to them. The second element that they requested us to look at was the issue of the royalties. So that I've touched on in the previous discussion that we had. So I've recently excluded that part about the royalties because I think we dealt with that extensively. But that was the area that they raised as a challenge around privacy. And the reason why it became also a challenge was also because of non-payment of royalties. They think that there is incentive from other struggling artists to reproduce their work and sell it themselves. Yes. So that is the relevance to the area of piracy. But if artists are being rewarded and compensated properly, on time, in terms of their royalties, then it will disincentivize any one of them from actually maybe underground producing their own music and try to sell it in the streets and get something in, you know, to live there. The third element was that because also the very same rights holders who are the artists do not know what the rights are. Therefore, we need to assist the industry to formalize itself, to operate professionally, to start looking at this as a business as opposed to a hobby. Because often the creative people actually live only from that. So if they cannot create that and make that a business, then it doesn't account for sustainability in terms of their income. So those are the three areas that we look at. But in this slide, I'm only addressing two areas. As I said, I'm not addressing the issues around royalties, but I'll only address the anti-piracy and the activities around that. So I've shared this slide before, but what is important in this slide is that I've spoken about the potential, but what should draw attention is the potential to create markets outside the country for local craft, local art, local intellectual property, for us to export more. We seem to be consuming more from outside, so the number of imports continues to be high, despite the fact that we've got big markets in the US, in the EU, for our intellectual property. So it does indicate an area that we need to explore from a policy perspective. And I know that Gus's area in relation to IPEP has looked into that, and then they will be implementing various interventions in that area. So this was the campaign that was done in Boston. We like box and I don't eat veggie. But this area was identified. There's an intersection in the event there around Boston. If you drive there, you'll see that area. There used to be a lot of these pirated movies and CDs sold in that intersection. It's prominent. It's known for that. So we then identified, together with the industry, we identified the spots around the country where we could do activations, you know, for the whole day, you know, distributing pamphlets, talking to people. So we identified those areas according to what the industry tells us. So this was a very interesting campaign as well around that area. So because I like going around Boksburg, when I pass there, I don't see as many as they used to be here. It used to be like the whole roadway and that intersection that we targeted, that whole road, and it's the main road, it just used to be those products. And as you stop at a robot, they are here, you know, and it's like, this is normal. So the industry is identifying this and giving us alerts around that. So our interventions, you'll see that I'm talking about cabbage and counterfeit goods in the same space. This is like one, the same thing really. The distinction is very thin. Our intervention is informed by the industry, is the education awareness, the inspections. They want us to support the development of the local industry. They want us to create a market outside the country for them so that we can actually make our own market stronger to be in a position to combat the illegal products that are coming from outside. They also want us to create space for promotion of local products through trade exhibitions and any other opportunity that DTI has. But also, on an ongoing basis, we already indicated that we will be amending the counterfeit goods, the Copyright Act, to just enhance and close the gaps around it. But also, the 1997 Counterfeit Goods Act, is we just need to amend it. It's not a priority area, but just to ensure that the processes around inspection and taking matters to court does not get to be as complicated as it is right now. So if you read the Counterfeit Goods Act, you see that for a case to go to court, you require the complainant. The complainant must be the owner of the product. So the owner of the product, for instance, if you confiscated the goods for Company A, alright, Company A must be available to go through that process, and often we do not find that if possible at all times in those cases that is needed. So we want to just simplify the process around that, because as I indicated the last time, that the approach that was taken in regards to intellectual property was that it is a private right and therefore it's for you to enforce. So even if government comes in, but there's a big reliance on you coming in to actually help government to pursue it. So we said that becomes a problem, because if you talk about ownership, from a technical point of view, a number of artists in this country don't actually own the work that they've produced. So ownership is not that person that you see performing the song there or you see on the CD cover. That person is not the owner. So the owner is somebody else that might not even be in this country. So your case is in court technically. You know, the police can arrest as many as possible, but a number of them get to fail when we get to court. So the intention here, Chair, as informed by the IT policy that is being finalized right now, is that area where we said that our intellectual property law must allow a space to protect the vulnerable small business people. So the artists will be those people that we're talking about. So we must allow and make the law to be easy for the state to protect those ones that are vulnerable. So it should be possible for the state to take up these cases through the court system, even if the owner is not there. As long as there's evidence enough and there's relationship enough between the work that is being pirated or counterfeited and the person that is the right holder, they have the right holder. So we'll be looking at those small things, and this process is coming as part of the proposed amendments to the IT law that Chair we have put on the program for the next financial year, not in this financial year. But it's an area that we just needed to address. So this was one of the sessions that we had in Mpumalanga, and all of these areas are identified by the various industry players, and they inform all of us. She might look like me, this one, but we're not related. Okay, so just in terms of the areas around anti-piracy, we had a project that was led by the former deputy minister, which started with various campaigns around the country, and as indicated, it also included a mass media campaign, which included TV and radio adverts. We continue to fly them at you know, different intervals when we do want to send the messages again. And we have had activations in various spots, especially the hotspots that have been identified by the industry. We work together with the industry as well to be in a position to make our messages get to the people. So because one of the things that was identified was the lack of coordination between departments. All of the departments that are relevant in the area, the Department of Arts and Culture, Communication, Home Affairs, Finance, and Department of Police, were all invited. So the project was implemented in a coordinated manner by all those departments. Finance, basically because of the fact that SARS is under finance. And Home Affairs because of the Films and Publications Board. And the others are obvious. So we ran various campaigns in various provinces. The campaigns continue, and we do activations as directed by the industry in terms of which areas we could activate in. But in our recent discussion with CIVIC, we've agreed that we need to put focus now on inspections, because if we do awareness that we are not visible in terms of inspections, that is not going to assist. Yes, it will help in a way, but we need to have an approach that is more comprehensive, that will make sure that there is visible inspections around this. In regards to improving compliance and conviction, we are continuing to conduct training for all of the inspectors, as well as the SAPS specifically, so that we are all on the same page in terms of the enforcement. And we are seeing the results in that we're seeing a lot of arrests that are taking place now, leading a number of convictions, and which is, I think, a good indication of the inroads that we're making. The industry association, especially through SAFRACT, which is a federation against copyright theft, is assisting a lot in terms of identifying the areas and also going with the police in various inspections, because that is the other thing, that when the police go by themselves, there is difficult to distinguish between a heritage good and the one that is not heritage. So you need somebody else to be able to do that. So by the time the police confiscate the goods, they must be sure that this is counterfeit or this is target good. Because in terms of the counterfeit goods legislation, the state can be held liable for confiscating the goods incorrectly. And which is good, because you can go there and confiscate somebody's goods and they would be with you in an airport for a week or so, and the person would not be able to trade. So there is that balance to ensure that what is being removed is really counterfeit or pirated goods, so that there is no issues around liability. So, this was in the Northern Cape. We do go to the Northern Cape as well. So these are just statistics just to show you just what has been happening, especially from staff and the police. And the reason why I'm saying that staff and police, because as we indicated, these are designated inspectors. Staff specifically is responsible for customs. So on a daily basis, that is what they do. And we do get the statistics from them as well in terms of the enforcement of the Counterfeit Goods Act. The police, you see the figures for the last financial year, the arrests and the convictions there, and the guilty verdicts, which is actually an encouragement, because previously, before we had the specialized courts, we used to have a lot of cases thrown out of the court because of those little technicalities. But now we're seeing an improvement in that area. SARS is also working very closely with the industry as well, and they've also come on board specifically to also assist the artists in terms of the areas that they need to be responsible for in regards to the tax issues. So they've been running the workshops as well for the industry, a part and parcel of the sessions that we're also running in terms of formalization. So they assist with that element to help the industry to manage themselves better. So the CDs, the DVDs, as we said, as much as counterfeit goods would relate to a number of things, trademarks and all of that, but you'll see that under, it's the copyright element that is largely being violated. And it is that area which we said actually has got a big potential in South Africa. And so this undermines exactly that. So here is just a slide that indicates some of the legal enforcement. And you will see, as I indicated earlier, that it does look like our local music is more pirated than your foreign music. So, which then actually impacts on the development of this industry in South Africa. That's also other figures from that fact as well. So, the music strategy is being developed by the department. This is one of the interventions. The reason why there should be a music strategy is that one of the reasons that was provided by the industry in terms of the issues around ownership as well is that there isn't an industry in South Africa. So they are forced to always being signed to foreign companies and therefore they would never own the work that they do. Hence, we indicated with the CRC report check that over 70% of the royalties paid in South Africa, they go outside the country. So the minister, when we engaged with the industry, committed to the industry that we will look into a strategy which will culminate into the creation of an incentive scheme that will allow for the development of the local industry to ensure that we support the industry so they can also compete, you know, effectively, whether it's locally or internationally. So this is being looked at, and GAS area is responsible for it, but the consultations have been done, and the strategy has been completed, and it's looking at very critical areas that are going to assist the industry to grow. So we also continue to involve the training of judges, which CPIC involves in, the training of judges, magistrates and prosecutors to just enhance the enforcement of the Counterfeit Goods Act. In conclusion, Chair, I just want to again reiterate that it is government's responsibility to protect IP. Yes, we know that it's a private right, but we think that there are vulnerable people that need to be protected for this industry to grow and realize the potential that it's got. And also, we know that the local products are more pirated, and we do need to ensure that we protect this industry from pirated goods, and that means that there must be enhanced enforcement. As I indicated, Chair, CPIC will be presenting to us a strategy which will then indicate how we're going to enhance the enforcement in coordination with SARS and SAPS. But that strategy must also look at how it's going to be sustained, because what these people know is that, no, the police are going to just show up one day and then they won't show up for the whole year. So for the whole year they can trade, so they can just run away for one day. So they're going to come up with a strategy that indicates how they're going to show, how they're going to maintain that on a consistent basis to make sure that these people do not just trade, but also look at the source of where these products are coming from. So CPIC will be providing that to us, and then we think that after that strategy we'll be in a position to report, I think, better results around enforcement. So I think I will just stop there. And I didn't touch on the elements around, because when we talk about illegal products, we talk about the role around labeling of goods as well. Because that is also part of those illegal products that enter the country. Those products that are shipped into the country without labels, and they have been labeled in South Africa. So the NCC is responsible for dealing with that. So I'm hoping that CPIC and NCC, when they come to address the committee, they can be in a position to present much more, I think, a broader impact in terms of their activities. Thanks.
DDG and Julia, really,
this was
an exciting update on the work that has been undertaken over the past few years, as I know you were really battling in this area to start with. And I know that there's a much that must all be done, but you certainly seem to have made a lot of progress in this regard, and we would be interested at some point in perhaps just before the end of the year in hearing progress on the CRPC the strategy to address these challenges. But let me hand it over to the members of the committee, please. Honourable Nkongi, Honourable Elvis. Sorry, Honourable Toko, I can't see the hand next to you. I don't know who it is. Honourable Luyenge, Honourable Toko, Honourable McPherson. Honourable Nkongi.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think we must applaud the good work that has been done by the department on this particular matter. But this is not a small issue here in South Africa. And I mean, the progress that has been made is supposed to be supported and be applauded. The DTC have explained some of the issues that are trying to undermine this good work. One is loopholes on the legislation, you know, and how quick can we do that, you know, as Parliament, to make sure that we tighten up the loose ends and make sure that we deal with this matter effectively. But there is an interesting matter that I would like us to discuss here. In these raids that we do, how do we avoid xenophobic, you know, targeting, which could be a perception and sometimes could be a reality that could put our country on the tier. That the most hot spots that we target are from foreigners. And most of these foreign nationals, they happen to be Africans instead of other nationalities. So how do we avoid that? You know, and how do we deal with your education and training, especially with the South African forces accepting bribes, you know, in the process of applying the law? Or if there are those cases, do you have such cases? You know, because we see even in the townships, when you have a law that says that a particular tavern is supposed to close at 10 o'clock, but it runs the whole night because police, when they arrive, they have been bribed. You know, so these are the two questions that I wanted to return.
Thank you, Honourable Nkongi. Honourable Elders.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for a good presentation. I just want to ask rather similar question. How quickly will we see the amendments in the Copyright Act? Also, given the fact that there's a whole review of the intellectual property system in South Africa, whether it will dovetail with that whole review, which is a long process, or will this specific process be fast-tracked to assist copyright holders? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Elders.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Let me just appreciate this presentation, which is actually indicating that a lot has been done with regard to dealing with issues that affect our intellectual property. But I've got a few questions. One, with regard to the new, to the identified loopholes in legislation, have you got as a department a priority list for those legislation loopholes that we have found for being fast-tracked by the committee? Because that will assist us a lot when we get to that, from you to say this particular pieces of legislation they need to address quickly. Then about the development of the local artists, do you have any mechanism to maybe formalize, or is there any formalization that is needed in the registration of the DJs? There's a lot of people if in every corner you find a DJ, you don't know whether this DJ is actually registered or is supposed to. and then the remixing. Who benefits out of the remixed music? Because the remixed music of artists that passed on some time ago, and then do they, do the families consent if you receive a royalty out of that? Then the last one is the issue of the bogus recording companies. There has been a number of artists who originate from Tata. They usually go to Johannesburg to record, and then they come back with that 80-20 beneficiation. And then ultimately, there were these recording companies in the corners of Tata to say, hey, there's a guy from Joburg, is recording 12 songs or an album for 4,000 rand a week. Is that registered? Is that maybe not promoting land, or because it will be a hand-to-mouth approach, because there will be that CD which is sold on the street by the same artist who is crying foul about their daughters being sold on the streets. Now, that's how they live now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Luyenge. Honourable.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I welcome the presentation. But I got a proposal around page 8, around intervention, that if we can get more updates, not only as regards 5 provinces, but what is done in other provinces, because this problem, the problem for the weekend. The second question I have is the role which is played by other teams of government, because the presentation is very silent about it. It seems to be a nationally driven program, but the other role players are not brought into the picture. The third one, Chairperson, I think we are all the in Parliament. We thought that we'd be able really to get some statistics, especially from SARS and also SAPS in relation to the financial year 2014, because it has already ended. So the update really must be done this time. And the last proposal, Chairperson, is that as the presentation is done by DTI, other role players must also be present, so that we are able really to get the better picture around what is happening as regards this particular problem. Thank you.
Now, I just want to make sure I got that last point right. You were referring to 2013-2014. Do we have someone else? Yes,
Arnold. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think when it comes to something like this, it comes down to the capacity of whichever entity is tasked with enforcing the regulations. And I think that that's where the problem lies. My personal opinion is that I don't think TATS has the ability or the, quite frankly, the manpower or resources to enforce these legislation. And that's where the real problem lies. So, you know, there is no country that is able to beat piracy or counterfeit, because it's such a lucrative business. It's like drug trade. You can limit it, but you will never stop it. So we have to ask ourselves, at what point do we deem that an acceptable level of capping this industry is? And I think that we need to be realistic. We can't say we're going to stop it, because it's never, ever going to stop. And I think that we turned our focus onto the enforcement of the legislation and the capacity for whether it is SAPS or whether it needs to be a new law enforcement unit that is just solely responsible for this. I think we can start to see some form of breakthrough. But also what we need to also look at is the what contributing factors are being played by large retail outlets. I think that if you start, you know, if you go to these factory outlets or retail parks, as they call them now, there seems to be a lot of shady goods that end up in these, a lot of so-called discounted rands, closed rands. Now, I'm not 100% sure in my mind that they are legitimate to be there. I mean, you can't just discount a pair of Armani jeans from 2,000 rand to 250 rand. It doesn't happen. So I would just like some comments on the role that maybe the bigger retailers are playing with this issue, and what your thoughts are about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Maxius. And over to yourself, DDT and Tilly.
Do you have
comment first?
I have no protection whatsoever. I know that DG will help me with this. So thanks for the comment, and I think I know the fact that has been made by Honourable Sobo in regards to maybe the update on those slides. We will provide the updated, but I think it was probably an omission from the preparation of the slide. We will update that information. And in regards to, I'm just going to try and go through according to the questions the way they were raised. Honourable Mkongi, the issue around xenophobic tendencies that could manifest themselves in the raids, we're always very mindful of them. However, the fact is, in the raids that have been conducted, the illegal immigrants have been found increasingly to be the ones that are trading in this. Not to say that the South Africans don't do it, but I'm saying that the statistics are showing that as well. But we're constantly mindful of that. Also in the training that we run with SARS and SAPS and CPIC, we emphasize those things because in as much as we enforce the law, we should not be enforcing it discriminately. We should be in a position to deal with the problem and not with the people. So we are conscious of that, and we try our best not to find ourselves on that side of the fence. And I think the issue around the bribes is something that is being raised all the time, I think, even by the public. But I think government is trying as well to say, please call the hotline, the president has got a line. If those allegations are there, people should also be active to contact those lines. What we do in this area, we are working also with SAFET. SAFET has a line, which is a crime line, which is linked to the crime line, the one that is piloted through the 702. We are encouraging people to report those things anonymously. If they are aware of any factories, of any retailers, of any people that are involved in this, then they can call that line, and the investigation will then be done by those people based on that anonymous team. So we do encourage people to really report any criminal activities, but we do understand that it is a challenge. People do feel that the inspectors do get to be bribed, but we will continue to encourage people to report those so that they are investigated and those people are rooted out. I think even yesterday when the new age debate on morning life was taking place on crime, that was the main challenge that people raised, to say, you know, people don't even go to report cases to the police because they just don't have the trust in the police. But I think we do need to build confidence in the systems and the measures that have been put in place to try and eradicate that and encourage the society to utilize them effectively. The issue around the amendment, Chair, the area that require amendment in the Counterfeit Goods Act are very small areas. It's those areas that will just allow the matters to be taken through to court without too much problem. The report that I received from CPIC indicates as well that, in fact, that is the problem in regards to a whole lot of issues. Like, for instance, when the goods have been seized from or confiscated at a particular point, they are supposed to be kept safely. So the minister has designated about 18 depots around the country. So those depots, you'll find them also, especially next to the harbors, there would be those depots. So once the goods have been confiscated, then they get to be kept safe there. But there's also processes around identification of those goods. There's also processes about witnessing
when the case goes to court. So we still receive challenges around that area. So those are the things that we just need to change in the Counterfeit Good Act. It's not a lot of things, because the legislation is okay. It allows for, I mean, even the penalties under that legislation, the minister can actually even increase the penalties if we want to increase the penalties. Currently, you know, for first-time offender, it's about 5,000 rand per item. If they confiscate goods from you, the fine would be on 5,000 per item, or up to 3 years imprisonment. So it doesn't look like we've got challenges around that area, but it's just getting, you know, the cases through the court system. So in the whole review of the IP legislation, we have singled out the Copyright Act, but there is nothing that prevents this Parliament, in the same way that we did with the amendments of the Credit Act, where we amended some sections of the Consumer Protection Act. So we can do an amendment of the small areas when we do the Copyright Act, if Parliament feels that we must bring these amendments as quickly as possible. There are a lot of changes, so they could be looked at in that process. But I think we think that it will be very useful to make those amendments. I think the issue around the capacity of the entities to enforce, as raised by Honourable McPherson, we do know the point. The capacity to enforce in this area, I suppose it can never be enough. We've expressed that before. And also the challenge is that, you know, the points of entry, the monitoring of the points of entry, the improvements that are taking place also in there. So it should not only be reliant on the capacity once these people are in the country. In fact, they should not even be coming to the country. So there is also discussion to enhance the border control and start specifically involved in that area. So I will not talk to that a lot. But we do think that also, I mean, in regards to CIPIC, certainly they do need capacity to be negotiating to enforce this area. So we can agree that there is a need to really up the game there, but also to increase the capacity. The role of large retail outlets, so we have engaged with our entities. You will see also in regards to the NCC that they have gone to do inspections in the places where we think that the things might be happening. Because chasing little people selling on the streets is okay, but it might not actually go to the necessary level. So it's important to look at the retailers, to look at, I mean, there are a lot of, what do they call them, outlets. They call them outlets. You know, where that is legal and to what extent can that be allowed? You know, where do you draw the line between what should not be allowed and what should be allowed? I think if we can make that distinction very clear, I think it will answer, I think, what Honourable McPherson is saying in terms of, you know, what's the cap? Where is the cap? What can we allow? And what are the parameters around that? So I think it's important for us to look in there. But I'm hoping that the strategy that CIPIC will be presenting and implementing soon will address the issues around the factories, the retailers. In fact, what we were told by the musicians, specifically in that engagement with them, was that you find pirated music in the legitimate retailers. You know, and which is a problem. So it's not because when you buy there, you think you're buying the real thing. But how they come through there, there is some sophistication that needs to be looked at very closely by inspectors. So it's an area that they do focus on and they look at. So the inspections will cut across, but then they will focus on the areas that the police and staff can be in a position to deal with. I've touched on all of the other issues. The other areas around the, I think it's those DJs, the DJs, they do pay royalties, but some obviously might not be, you know, registering with your research and those that collect royalties. and you find that they play in, especially in informal areas, but all of the DJs that you see, the ones that are actually non-DJs, they do pay royalties to the musicians for those songs that they're playing. But we do encourage all of them to do the same, because it's the same way, if they do have their own records, they would not want anybody else to be playing them without compensating them and making a living out of that. The bogus recording companies, there's a number of them. This has also come out from the CRC report, that a whole lot of artists, because they don't have, they're limited recording opportunities. So they do, you know, find themselves in the spaces where there's like this bogus recording labels, and then they record, and then the music disappears. And the next time it comes out somewhere, and they are not able to really claim such work. So this is an area that perhaps also deal with the Copyright Act, will then be in position to see where we'll close the loopholes. But it comes purely from the fact that we don't have enough in terms of the industry itself. Even the other recording companies that exist in South Africa are battling. They're not doing very good. So we're hoping that GAS will implement a very good strategy to build the local industry so that we can, you know, actually grow the economy. Thanks.
Chairperson, Mr. Davies often says one of the things that we might to get right is the Al Capone syndrome, which is the fact that Al Capone was guilty of murder, armed robbery, racketeering, and every other sin, but they eventually got him for tax fraud and put him away for the rest of his life. I think that's one of the things that intergovernmental coordination and intelligence-driven approaches to these problems could possibly be strengthened on.
I think that, you know, has fleshed back on our list a little bit more than the DJ community. And I know that we'll have, of course, DJ Strachan in coming immediately now, which will carry on in this vein. But have you completed with your responses? Certainly sounds like that, DJ. Right. I really do want to thank you, because the long time since we've had, as you know, an engagement specifically in this area, being just legislation, and I do believe that we need to engage with you again very soon, perhaps, you know, November sometime, just at the point where you may have got some further information. Thank you very much there. Now, we immediately, members, go move on, still in this area to a large extent, the NRCS, which I believe the DDG Strachan, am I correct here, DDG Strachan, you're going to hold the fort here. Is that correct?
To the extent that IDD is responsible for one of the constitutional mandates, which you think is NRCS, I would report.
That's what I'm thinking, yes. So if you could do a quick start off and perhaps give us 7 minutes of your time or so as you breeze through that one, and then to be followed by yourself, Sard. I'm just looking, and that would be Mr. Moodley, is it? No, hang on, who have we got here? Mr. Ramelli. Well, who? All right, please introduce yourself.
Thanks, Chairperson. Sogan Moodley from the NRCS.
Well, that's what I said. Moodley, and you shook your head. Right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since you want me to take 7 minutes, I'm obviously going to go through it pretty quickly. The illicit economy is growing massively. Customs fraud and illegal imports is a key component. Illicit trade characterized by illegal imports and evaluation, false declarations, rerouting, misuse of duty rebates and credits, and full-on fraud is a very significant problem in our estimation, because it erodes the country's manufacturing capacity and competitiveness, and its revenue base, as well as legitimate formal employment creation. Illegal activities of this sort give illegal and unfair advantages to companies in other jurisdictions competing against South African manufacturers who have to abide by the rules. The DTR's work in the area is mainly advocating effective policy interventions specifically that trade facilitation should include a strong element of safeguarding South African manufacturing from unfair trade practices. The DTR is obviously not the operational department on customs issues, and SARS and Customs will be giving a presentation after me, so I'll be able to skip through some of the slides. The national mandate for the Industrial Development Division resides with the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications, and our emphasis set out in six successive iterations of ICAP is on regulating compulsory specifications in support of industrial development to lock out unsafe and non-compliant products and lock in compliant products, including for export markets. In other words, South African manufacturers are and should increasingly become known for high quality, safe and good products in export markets. The NRCS was established through the National Regulator of Compulsory Certification Act of 2008. As everybody probably knows, the new act came to force at the end of last year. The NRCS is tasked with the administration of technical regulations, including compulsory specifications to safeguard human health, safety and environmental health. The DTI, through the NRCS, develops and administers compliance with compulsory specifications. Imported goods with compulsory specifications require letters of authority. The NRCS works with SARS to ensure compliance on these. It works closely with government agencies, especially customs, and the NRCS conducts port and post-border checks and inspections, working closely with other government institutions, and non-compliant goods are confiscated and destroyed. There's a notable rise of non-compliant imports against the backdrop of increased LOA applications and intensified and unreasonable pushback by importers, including in high-risk sectors, and impending legal action against the Department of Trade and Industry. Post-border NRCS inspection, including retailers, has not significantly, or to the extent that it should have, improve compliance with compulsory specifications in the marketplace. And any of you who have bought household durables, for example, in the plumbing space, would know what I'm talking about. Specifically, difficulties with respect to the volume of inspections required for all outlets across the country. Selling regulated products is a problem. There are finite resources to carry out the traditional inspections approach, and there's also an increase in industry and consumer complaints with respect to non-compliant products. Therefore, a border enforcement approach we think is optimal to lock up the non-compliant products at the ports of entry, in addition to enforcement and inspection at manufacturers and retail outlets. It should read, I beg your pardon. NRCS has established, and Asagan will correct me if I make any mistakes, and he knows much more about the subject than me, has established operational capacity to enforce at 19 ports of entry. Those are the 5 seaports, 2 airports and 12 inland ports set out there. Due to the wide scope of products covered by the NRCS mandate set against limited resources, the intensity of the inspections is based on 3 risk classifications, high, medium and low. These are profiled according to the 3 main risk factors categorized into country of origin, company, import and product, and this model is subject to refinement with the intention of dedicating more resources to the high risk areas going forward. I'm not going to deal with this since you are, Madam Chair, going to have a presentation from Customs Division of SARS. We're working very closely with the customs section of SARS, and they have ramped up their capacity and capabilities. We are working closely with them with respect to the reference price system, focusing first of all on the clothing and textile sector, with ongoing engagement with the Port of Entry Control Center, and then we, with the support of SARS, or we say we participate in the Customs Federation Key Industries Forum, which has a particular focus on the clothing, textile, leather and footwear sector. Over 3 years, 1 billion rand worth of illegal or substandard goods have been confiscated. The reference passing system has grown from 17 to 131 items. Conformity assessments between SARS and NRCS and regulatory departments reside under the Border Control Operation Coordinating Committee. It was reported that the system has proved successful with close to 39,000 import declarations and more than 55,000 export declarations since its introduction, and I've spoken about the pushback by importers in high-risk sectors, and by high-risk we mean risk to the safety and health safety of consumers. In conclusion, IPEF is focused on locking out non-compliant products, and as I said, locking in compliant manufacturing products to protect South African manufacturers against illegal and unfair trade practices which give manufacturers in other jurisdictions an unfair advantage. The key actions include closer and more detailed cooperation between customs, SARS, that is, the DTI, the MFCS, SABS, the Department of Justice, manufacturers and importers, including through the multilateral forums. We need scaled up targeted port and post-port inspection and raids. An area which we have signaled as a problem for some time is a necessity to put the big guns in court and get them prosecuted. And we are involved in steady and incremental strengthening and alignment of the standards, quality assurance and accreditation and metrology institutions, including the MRCS. Thank you. It was 9 minutes.
I think you covered all aspects extremely well, DJ. And all the questions will arise after the presentation. But if you can say where you are, and then if we can call on, because the questions will come together, we can then call on the stars, like I say, stars. Who's going to be making the presentation from SARS? If you would introduce yourselves, because I'm not familiar with either of you.
Thanks, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Jean Ravel. I am Chief Officer responsible for enforcement in SARS. Most of the areas we wanted to touch on have been touched on quite extensively by the presenters from the DTI family. Perhaps let me start by sharing with you our strategy at a glance. The SARS Act gives us legislative mandate to collect all revenue due to the state in a most effective and efficient way. It also gives us powers to ensure that taxpayers and trading entities comply with their tax and customs obligations. It also also gives us some form of enforcement powers, enforcing the law. Even though we are not part of the broader law enforcement community, the difference between us and law enforcement is that we register the entities that we deal with. We register taxpayers, we register trading entities, we register bonded warehouses, we register transporters who transport goods across the borders, and we license them. And as part of the licensing regime, there are licensing conditions. If they breach those conditions, they could lose their licenses. That's the relationship that we've got in terms of taxpayer and data management. We as part of our strategy, we say that we need to build a better fiscal citizenship, and we have adopted in our enforcement action as well as compliance a risk management approach. Before, Madam Chair, we will strive to stop as many containers at the border as we have wanted to. At that time, it will create a gridlock to both the economy and the port itself. So we introduce smarter risk management systems. We put a risk management system that we load rules onto. So what we'll do, we'll compare with other customs administrations all over the world and see what risk rules they've developed. So, for example, we'll speak of Brazil and say, when a Chinese company brings in towers to Brazil, at what price, at what value do they declare? So we'll go to another country in South America and ask the same question. So we compare with what Chinese companies are declaring here. That's what we call reference pricing. And then we'll have that database. When a company brings in clothing and textiles below that reference price list, our reference price becomes the value. We don't accept what they are bringing. The one other good thing is that in terms of the new customs duty bills, which are waiting for being gazetted into law, they've gone through the parliamentary process already. It is compulsory or rather our determined value origin or tariff classification of any goods that are declared at the border stands. So if we feel that a trader has undervalued or declared the wrong origin of goods or misclassified the tariff of the goods, we have our own database that we refer to. And it will be very, very difficult for a trader to challenge that. We also adopted a few years ago, Madam Chair, a compliance model. Many revenue authorities all over the world use that model. The model is premised on the understanding that there are taxpayers who really want to comply, but they do not know what to do. So it focuses on educating the taxpayers and traders, educating them of their obligations, and also telling them this is what would happen if you don't stick to your obligations. You would have realized that our latest marketing campaign on the 5 inches, we're saying to people, please don't inflate the number of dependents you have on your medical aid. Because if you do that, this is what is going to happen to you. So we're trying to educate people of what they need to do and the dangers of not doing what they need to do. So action ranges from if a person, for instance, decides to willfully and intentionally contravene the law, we conduct a criminal investigation. So when people are willing to do it, but they are unable or they are being ill-advised, we'll enter into an arrangement that resolves the issues amicably. And this is the model in a better picture, that we need to educate, service our taxpayers and traders in cases where they don't want to comply, then you use the full might of the law in enforcement. The new Customs Duty and Customs Control Act that I spoke about, when we put these legal instruments together, it followed a number of developments globally. The WCO adopted a WCO safe framework of standards in the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks in the US, where the Americans wanted to push compliance to the country of origin. The Americans wanted all countries that want to trade with them to institute risk management systems at the country of origin. So they were pushing risk management to the country of origin. So if you want to trade with us, here are the safeguards that you need to. They pursued that for quite a long time. At the end of the day, we agreed on having some framework of standards. The other one is the revised Kyoto Convention, which really governs a lot of things, including exchange of information and all that. Out of that, we have something that we call the Green Paper on Customs Modernization, which went through the government process up until cabinet, which was the master plan for modernizing customs to what it is today. Modernizing our systems, automating our interaction with traders, and then it led to the Customs Control Bill as well as the Customs Duty Bill, which will be enacted into law, I'm told, in a month or two. I think I've said this. Maybe let me just reiterate it. Customs exist in order to collect revenue. It's a consequence of many things that we do. We facilitate trade. In facilitation of trade, that's when you get your revenue. We also exist to protect society and certain sectors of the economy, more especially those that are vulnerable, like the clothing and textile sector here in the Western Cape. And also protect industry from harmful and fair trade practices, including counterfeiting goods and that. The other function that we've got is border control. What people choose to call it border security. We've got an anti-smuggling force at the port of entry. We also have an extension of that inland. That's the entity that our colleagues on the DGI were referring to, which helps them in terms of looking into counterfeit goods policy and all that. So this is, I know this slide is a little busy, I want to open the whole slide, but I'll explain what it means. This is the value chain, what we call the trade supply chain that customs looks at. It starts with registration of entities, then it gets to trade facilitation, part of the regulatory control that we got. One of the main features of this slide is intergovernmental relations. We can't do our work without collaborating with other government agencies. Some of them are at the port, some of them are away from the port. For example, and I want to use a little bit of a strange example. When somebody dies overseas and the remains are brought into South Africa, customs can't release the body until the health department has conducted an inspection on the body and see that the body is not contaminated. And if we suspect that inside that body there may be some illegal stuff, we'll take it to the government mortuary. So for the government mortuary to check if nothing has been put into body. So all I'm saying is that in order for us to do that, we need to cooperate with other government agencies. If it's a standard issue, the standard authority within DGI will send a sample to them. If the cell phone will send a sample to ICASA for ICASA to say, this is fit to be used in South Africa. So it helps in dealing with both counterfeiting of goods as well as standard issue. When it comes to counterfeit goods, we've got a role to play at the part of it. If the customs officer suspects that the consignment is made up of counterfeit goods, that customs officer will speak to what we call the brand agents or brand owners in South Africa. They are represented by many law firms. So they will send an agent to come and draw a sample. They'll be able to determine whether it's counterfeit or not. At that point, we hand over the consignment to the brand owner. When we do disposal through destruction, we conduct a joint disposal together with the brand holders. And we have automated our process, like I said. Before, it used to take something like 7 days, something about 4 years ago. 7 days for a truck to be cleared in Bridge. Now it takes about almost 7 minutes. Because we have automation assistance. And automation here means that people submit their entries electronically in advance. By the time the truck reaches the port of Bridge, we've gone through the declaration documents. Before it gets there, we would have asked for supporting documents, if any. So most of the trucks that leave through the port of Bybridge would have been coming from Durban. So the container may come by train to Joburg, from Joburg out through Bybridge, or from Durban directly to Bybridge. When it leaves Durban, you would have received all the documents, would have conducted your risk assessment, and the driver of the truck wouldn't know whether they are going to be stopped for inspection at the border. They will only know when they get to the border. And we have also automated our inspections capabilities. So an inspector at the border will get a message. We've got these iPad devices that are given by inspectors. An inspector will get a message on that iPad saying, truck with registration number this container number, you need to conduct an inspection and look at the following things. And because an iPad device, it takes pictures also of what is in the container. Then the inspector will get a message from our processing center saying everything is fine, a lot of traffic goes. And we do that so that we protect our revenue base. Most of the goods that are exported out of South Africa, if they are manufactured in South Africa, people come and claim theft on exports. That's where the issue of round tripping comes in. When somebody drives a truck through the border, an inspection is conducted, a picture is taken. Or before we did the picture, somebody just drive through, the documents were stamped, drive to the Mozambican side. Somebody in Mozambique claims the documents, they have to come around, they go and claim a lot of money in fact. With this automation now, we have dealt with that problem. We find it very, very minimal instances of that type of fraudulent activity. So we have got about 3 or 4 processing centers nationally. I think there's one in Cape Town, one in Devon, one in Aberdeen, and one in Durrancroft, is already Centurion. So we don't do our processing at the port anymore. So a person sitting in Devon could process an entry that has been submitted in Johannesburg. So you don't have, so we did that to try and prevent corruption. So if you know who are the officers working in Office X, you can take your entry to only that officer for them to process. Now because it has been automated, once submitted, the system will direct that entry to the next available consultant at any given processing center. So it doesn't matter where you are. Like I said, people don't know in advance which container they are going to inspect. So also it helps in dealing with corruptibility. This is what I've spoken about, automation and before I get single registration, I want to there's an issue that the colleagues from the DTI touched on. The illicit tobacco. Maybe let me start with that. I'll come back to
to civil rights. We have been working on the illicit tobacco sector for some time now, Madam Chair. I remember there's one sex or cigarette manufacturer and importer we've been investigating now for about 17 years. That's how old the problem is. And the problem is not only counterfeit cigarettes. You have counterfeit cigarettes that are imported from places like Zimbabwe. You've got cigarettes that are counterfeit here in South Africa by some manufacturers. You also have cigarettes that are manufactured in South Africa, but because the manufacturer didn't pay any excise, any excise duty, they are sold very cheap in the market. So normally what some of these manufacturers do is their factories will work on day shift from 9 to 5. But they'll have a night shift that is not registered with anyone. At night they will produce something that they call the B-stock. The B-stock is meant for the informal sector. Some of it is made up to be loose draws. It's not packaging. Right? So they will target the poor areas like mining towns, informal settlements. They go and sell their product into those areas. If a pack of 20 from a reputable company where excise has been paid cost 35 rand, these guys will sell their pack of 20 for anything between 10 and 12 rand. Because they haven't paid any excise on it. So we've been grappling with this problem for some months. According to data or statistics we got from the Tobacco Institute of Southern Africa, it's not coming from us. One in four cigarettes smoked in South Africa is illegal, which equates to something like 39% of the total market. So 15 million sticks of cigarettes, which is equivalent to 750,000 packets of 20s, are sold illegally in South Africa every day. And the revenue loss to the fiscal is estimated at something like 3 billion rands in both excise duties and VAT. And the revenue loss to the legitimate traders, legitimate manufacturers, is about 2 billion rands. And there are reasons to this, maybe to give context. Something that as policymakers, you perhaps need to look at. There's this concept of sin tax. Every year we increase excise by a certain percentage. The more it becomes expensive to produce, market, and distribute your product, you drive it to the underground. Because the excise taxes are too high, many people go to the underground. So the underground market emerges. Everybody wants to operate in the underground. Even those that are operating above board, they'll have the A stock and the B stock to try and survive. Something that we as policymakers perhaps need to look at. The second thing I think I need to explain why since 2008 the tobacco trade, illicit tobacco trade became a problem. Zimbabwe is probably the biggest producer of tobacco in Southern Africa. When the US and the EU declared sanctions on Zimbabwe, Zimbabwe has stockpiles of tobacco. And you can only store tobacco in your warehouses for 3 years. After 3 years, so they had, there's no demand. Their biggest clients are in the US and the EU. And many smaller manufacturers emerged in South Africa. And there was no tobacco coming from Zimbabwe being manufactured in South Africa. Some South Africans have factories in Zimbabwe so that they can smuggle the cigarettes into the country. So we've been grappling with the problem for some time, Madam Chair. And the profit margins on cigarettes, are becoming more and more not very attractive for people that are paying the excise duty and all taxes, but especially when there's this lucrative illicit side of that trade. The other problem that we've got is our
we've got a very porous borderline. And assumptions make that the cigarettes that are smuggled through South Africa come to, all of them come through the port of entry. There are places on the borderline of this country where there are no fences. There are no fences between South Africa and Botswana, for instance. And you find that the border is just a river which is dry for more than half an hour. So in some of these areas, you will see tracks of trucks driving into the country. And on the South Africa-Zimbabwe borderline, you'll see peasants carrying boxes and boxes, you know, master cuttings of cigarettes. If they come through 10 times a day, they will bring a truckload of cigarettes. And some of the farmers along the border are working with these people, smuggling the cigarettes. And there are those that come through the port of entry. They'll come through a port of entry mostly when a truck is declared as fence. Say a truck that delivers perishable goods to Zimbabwe, and it comes back after delivering food and veggies to Shoprite, for example. When it comes then declared as empty, it's very normal, because it wasn't going to bring anything back, you see. So most of the cases, we use the 80-20 principle. You only look at 20% of those trucks that are declared as normal in terms of your risk assessment. But as part of the 80%, some of those trucks that are declared as empty could be coming in with cigarettes. So we have upped our coverage model. We try and stop every second truck declared as empty. Even if it's not a full inspection, you can the container with your hand and feel the density. You can say that there's something here, that's, you know. There are people with a very good nose. Some of our inspectors, they can smell cigarettes from a distance. I don't know. It's and we've got dogs also at the post of entry that are trained to look at all sorts of things, including tobacco, CDs and DVDs. Yeah. Okay. So I've spoken about the remedies that we have in place, especially for undervaluation. The reference pricing has helped us a lot. Since we introduced it, we have seen a drop in some of the imports that you used to get on textiles as well as clothing. So in percentage terms, there's been a drop. And there's been an increase in pricing. So the prices that they are now declaring, they decrease their prices because they realize that playing the system hasn't been working that well. Second thing also, Madam Chair, I just wanted to mention the countries that are giving us the most problems when it comes to this issue. I think China is the first one. We don't have the... I didn't want to put it here. So China would be the biggest problem we've got. We're trying to address this thing through our BRICS Heads of Customs Forum. And the response from our Chinese counterpart has been that, let me start by saying, if you catch someone who brought in clothing or textiles from China, and you question their original documents, like invoices, so you will contact the Chinese Customs Authority. They'll give you the original, which may be different from the ones that you received. But that original, they put a stamp across the paper saying this can't be used in any court of law. So you know about it. If you go to court, if a trader challenges you, you will drop the case because you can't use it in court. So we've been raising these things with them, and their consistent message has been that it is against the law in the country to provide that information to us. The last time we met, they promised us that they are looking into amending their law in the spirit of BRICS. The next one is Lesotho. Whether we believe it or not, Lesotho, most of the clothing and textiles that are coming from Lesotho are undervalued. There was a time Zimbabwe was the second one, but Zimbabwe sort of fallen off the list. And the third one is India, and the fourth one is Swaziland. There are a lot of research shops that have been set up in some of these countries that are run by Chinese nationals. So in conclusion, Chair, we we're working very well through collaboration with other government entities. I think we realized some time ago that the whole of government works better than any other can work privately. And we have been getting a lot of support from the GCI, ICHEC, Home Affairs for some of the work that we are doing with them, which has been working very well. And we're also part of the committee that's looking into the creation of the Border Management Agency. And we've been making very meaningful contribution. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think the two inputs together have really helped. Mr. Ashigan Moodley, the Chief Executive Officer from the NRC-SRC, when the questions come up, please feel free to also respond. Thank you very much. Members, it's over to you to raise any questions, make any comments. Thank you. Honourable McPherson, Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable Mkongi, is that it? Right.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just on Mr. Strachan, I'm a bit concerned that he only mentions two airports. As far as I know, there are three international airports in the country, one not being covered. And what about private airports? Are we not seeing any coverage at private airports? Then just to the SARS representative, I actually want to disagree with you. I don't think that that Lesotho is the second highest. I think it's actually Mauritius. And I'll tell you why. Because Mauritius has a certain capacity for weaving of textiles and garment manufacturing. But if you went to look at your database, you will actually find that there is more meters of woven textiles and made-up garments that are coming into this country as being labeled as from Mauritius than actually Mauritius can make. And I'll tell you exactly how they're doing it. That China is sending them garments or fabric or unprinted or undyed fabric and then finishing it, dyeing it there and relabeling it as Mauritian, and then it obviously is able to come into sell it. But there's a big problem there, and that's his information that has been relayed to me from the different textile manufacturers and retailers in this country, and it's something that does need to be looked at. Because unfortunately the SADC agreement has been totally abused by China through Mauritius, Lesotho and Swaziland. So I'd just like some comments around those three points. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Macpherson, Honourable Hill Lewis.
Yes, Chair, I just wanted to ask a question on a specific issue to the SARS representative to that presentation. I wanted to ask you about the proliferation of these so-called Chinese malls, shopping malls around the country. I'm not calling the Chinese shopping malls pejoratively. They're called that. It's actually like on the side of the building it says Chinese shopping mall. And there's several in Cape Town. There's one around the corner from me. And if you go there, anyone can go there any time of the day. Not one of the stores takes credit card payments. They all only deal in cash. All of the goods are extremely discounted, like unrealistically so, undercutting all South African competition. And none of the staff in the store speak a word of English. Now, that doesn't necessarily define them as illegal immigrants, I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying altogether those three factors make one extremely suspicious of those shopping malls and how they are allowed to operate. Now, we all know where they are, we all know where they operate and what they're doing. My question is why does it seem so difficult for SARS and customs to go and check out those places and investigate them in depth and find out what's happening there? Because they're just proliferating. Every week we see another one in our suburbs across the country.
Thank you, Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable Mkongi.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the presentations that were being given to the Indian, they talk to each other. Mm. For example, one of the fundamental issues that I'm dealing with is to find substandard goods that are coming from foreign. And I don't hear about substandard goods that are producing in the country. We have a challenge too. And if we have a challenge, what are we doing about the substandard goods that are produced in mass here in South Africa? What are the challenges?
Thank you, Honourable Mkongi. you very much. Those are the three questions or comments. Thank you very much. Over to yourself then. And, you know, any one of you may respond. Obviously, SARS was there required to make certain specific responses.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first question on Mauritius. I chose to focus on undervaluation. On route of origin, it's Mauritius. You see, customs is about three things. It's about tariff classification of goods, it's about origin of goods and value of goods. I chose to use the value on the example that I gave. In fact, on rules of origin, Mauritius is the first one. It's not even China. So it is a fact, you're correct. And these are things that we have been raising through the SADC Secretariat. That some of these, you know, the SADC protocol is being breached every day. Mauritius is not the only country that's breaching the SADC protocol. So we have been raising these issues and engaging. I mean, there are suggestions also that Mauritius is a tech nation. You probably have heard something like that. But we are raising this thing through the correct platforms, and we hope that it will be able to be resolved. On the second issue relating to proliferation of China malls, in Joburg and in Cape Town, last year we had joint operations with the police and Home Affairs, where we took containers and containers of goods they could not account for. Most of their goods, you can't call them counterfeit because they are not branded. They don't brand the goods, so you can't go there. So what we'll go and do is say we're looking for original import documents. You don't expect a retailer to have import documents. So they will lead us to a person that clears the goods for them. And if they can't give us something that's satisfactory, we seize the goods of the state. We've been doing that for quite a long time. But also, Chair, there is an area that we don't want to really get into. The migration laws in this country are something that doesn't fall within our realm. You've got people in South Africa that come while they are waiting for their asylum, they become economically active. It doesn't happen anywhere in the world. But I don't want to get into that share. What I'm saying is, we will play our part, and other government agencies play their part also. But through joint action, I think we're making huge inroads. I mean, the China malls problem, you've got shopping centers that are shutting down. I mean, Maraba Star has been taken over, for example. It used to be a vibrant thing. So because local businesses can't compete, I mean, in suburbs, they are taking over those small shopping centers. They are all being converted into China shops. I think it's something that at legislature's level needs to be resolved. We can do what our law allows us to do. That's all we can do, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Yourself, Mr. Moodley, or DEG? Okay.
Thanks, Chairperson. Two questions. With regard to the airports, we just conducted a risk assessment on Kinshasa. Honourable members will recall that Kinshasa was not a very large international airport, but now that the Dubai airport is here, it came into the fold. We have conducted the risk assessment, and Kinshasa will be included in the host entry that we are going to have a presence. We've already engaged with the authority at Kinshasa Airport to have a presence there at the airport as well. Chairperson, with regard to the local manufacturing, regulated products, products that comply with compulsory specifications, we use the source inspections as our approach. Source could be two places, at either the port of entry, as was mentioned by SARS, or at the point of manufacture. So we do know that we do go to the manufacturing concerns to ensure that the products manufactured locally comply with other technical regulations or compulsory specifications. The problem is that it does not talk to the quality, it talks to safety. So you may have a product that is not regulated or substandard, but because it does not impact on the safety of the environment or the health of the consumer, or the consumer is have a fair trade, then it falls out of our ambit. If the product is in results in a consumer being disadvantaged, then we leave that to the National Museum Commission to deal with it. But we do work very closely with the Museum Commission, where they, where the impact of regulation for us have been felt negative. Thank you.
Thank you, DG Strachan.
Yes, thank you. I think the board's referred to where the NRCS is. It's not that we're not aware of all the other posts. Secondly, the Mauritius issue might not be as simple as the textile manufacturers are suggesting to you. In fact, we've done a very detailed independent study by BMM analyst Stefan Van Dahl, who's one of the foremost experts in the trade area in the country. And it's very difficult to prove what you're suggesting the textile manufacturers have told you by an examination of the trade statistics. And I'll say, perhaps what we said to the textile manufacturers, if you've got proof of this, we'd be very happy to see it, because the trade statistics don't paint as clear a picture as you are suggesting with respect. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, we're not going to have a dialogue, but what I am going to call on you to assist us with, Honourable McPherson, is to provide what you can in terms of proof to assist, because I think you're just as keen to see the matter resolved, and if whatever proof that you may have, if this can be made available to the DTI as such, I think it's going to be extremely helpful. I do just want to close now, please, because it's 25 past one. It's half an hour over the time scheduled to close on this particular meeting. But I'd like to certainly thank the DTI members who came down from Johannesburg, and also SARS, and also the other entities in this regard, such as yourself as well, similarly. The DDG that are here with us today, the acting DDG, and also to thank the Parliamentary Liaison Officer this night as well. Thank you very much. Members, just to remind you that tomorrow the meeting will begin at 9 a.m. It will be in this room as well, going from 9 until 1 o'clock. Thank you very much.